Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. If you've missed any of my talk radio breakfast show, don't worry. We've put some of the punchiest bits of this morning's show into a bite-sized podcast, the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. Enjoy.
Talk radio. Julia Hartley Brewer at breakfast on Talk Radio.
Good morning to you. This is Talk Radio Breakfast with me, Julia Hartley Brewer. Thank you very much indeed for your company. Delighted to welcome my next guest to the show, Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Julia.
Good morning. Well, you had your big speech at party conference, the virtual Tory conference yesterday. Today is the turn of the Prime Minister. In a couple of hours' time, he's going to be speaking and he's going to announce that he wants the UK to be the Saudi Arabia of wind and focus on creating, he says, maybe hundreds of thousands, millions, he says, of jobs in part as part of the Green Industrial Revolution. Is this really the way that we are going to repair our books and get the economy back on track?
Well, I think it's absolutely right that we're talking about jobs, and that is obviously the key economic topic that we should all be focused on. And the Prime Minister is right. The Green Industrial Revolution is something that he both feels passionately about and is something that will be very good for our country. Offshore wind is a great example of a technology that we happen to be very good at internationally. This is something that is one of our country's strengths, and he wants to double down on that and ensure that we not only are using more offshore wind, which is great because it is now a cheap and green form of power, but in doing so, create lots of new jobs and capture more of the value in making all the turbines and exporting the technology as well. So, and if you look at where that's happening, it's in parts of our, all around the country where we'd like to see more growth. It's part of our levelling up agenda as well. So it ticks lots of boxes, and I think it's an incredibly exciting announcement.
Okay, so we currently have 10 gigawatts of offshore wind power capacity. He wants to raise that to 40 gigawatts. Experts in the industry saying that we'd need a new wind turbine built every single day for a decade and a 50 billion, not million, 50 billion pound investment. Presumably you've run the numbers on that.
Yes, that's right. And this is, you know, this has been put together in conjunction with the industry. There's an existing sector deal. The Secretary of State for Energy has been involved. The Prime Minister is deeply involved. I think we all have a very ambitious view of what's possible here. As I said, this is an industry we're already globally leading in. We want to double down on that ambition, grow the use of wind power in our energy mix. It's cheap, it's green. And as we can make more and more of this stuff at home, that's more jobs here, and we can start exporting it and new technology like floating offshore wind, which is also part of the announcement, around the world. And you put all of that together, and that's exactly what we should be doing. It's not wrong to be ambitious, and no. I'm glad that we're doing that.
But just checking that when the wind doesn't blow, we're going to have the backup nuclear power stations and other power mechanisms to actually make sure that, you know, we can still put electricity on.
Yeah, actually, funnily enough, the Prime Minister and I were just visiting a company yesterday in the clean tech space, Octopus Energy, and they do a fantastic job with a new technology platform of allowing their customers to change when and how they use, how we all use energy. For example, if you're charging a new electric car, and actually it's better to do that not at the peak time that everyone's using energy. We can do that at different times, which is both cheaper and enables us to spread our demands across the day. So we get a lot more out of the energy we have. You know, that's going to be an important part of our future as well. And it's exciting that British technology companies companies like Octopus are leading the charge.
Okay, well, we know an important part of our future is going to be paying off a lot of the generosity that was shown by, you know, you in your name, but let's face it, it was the British people that came together, that furlough scheme to help everybody, wrapping our arms around the nation. Some people missed out. We know there are a few million people who missed out, but vast numbers of people didn't under that furlough scheme. You warned yesterday in your speech of the sacred duty to balance the books for future generations. And you said, otherwise, what is the point of us, meaning the Conservative Party, and saying those hard choices are everywhere. What will those hard choices be? What sort of tax rises and or public service cuts will we actually have to see to make those hard choices?
I mean, I can't comment on fiscal future fiscal policy, Julius, you should forgive me for that. But more broadly, what I'd say is the following. It's important that this year we acted in the way we did, which meant borrowing a lot to try and protect as many jobs as possible and protect as much of our economy as possible so that it could emerge on the other side of this. That's in our long run interest. But I think the other point, which is, I think, entirely most people would reasonably agree, we can't carry on borrowing at these record levels forever and a day. So once we get through this, we'll need to look at that and make sure that we have strong public finances. You know, that's important for the simple reason I was only able to act in the way that I did with the scale and pace that we did because I inherited an incredibly strong economy and strong public finances after 10 years of conservative economic management. And it's because of all those decisions that were made that I was able to do what I did. And you know what? Difficult things like this, crises come along every so often. And the government of the day needs to be in a position to respond like this. And that's why you've got to have strong public finances once you get through them.
And is this why we understand from briefings in Cabinet have been arguing for us not to have a second lockdown, because actually the economic damage will be so great from a second lockdown that actually it's not a viable option. We understand that you and other senior members of the Cabinet have been trying to sort of push the government to be more perhaps opening up the economy rather than shutting it down, your Eat Out to Help Out campaign, encouraging people back in the workplace. Where does that end, though? Because we are somehow in a sort of a strange sort of middle ground at the moment where we're possibly teetering on a second full lockdown. We've got a lot of local measures, 25% of the country living under very big restrictions, possibility of many more following as well. And at the same time, we're seeing, you know, more and more jobs being lost, the end of the furlough scheme. How do you balance all that up? And how hard are you fighting to keep the economy open?
Well, you know, Julian, right, it's really difficult to balance all those things. I think the important point, and the point I've made, and that I think is widely shared, is that when we do make these decisions, that we consider all of these things in the round, and that's what we have to do. So we have to think about what are the impact on our children's education, what are the impact on people catching coronavirus, what are the impact on non-health issues of people missing appointments or delayed operations, and then what are all the economic impacts, people's jobs, financial security, which also ultimately has an impact on their long-term health conditions and indeed our ability to fund public services and the NHS. So, you know, all of those things have got to be in the mix. This is a complicated problem and there are lots of different impacts and we need to consider them all in the round and then make what are very difficult judgments.
We had the Eat Out to Help Out campaign during the summer, and that definitely got a lot of people who, not just about spending the money, a lot of people who perhaps very fearful of leaving their homes out and about, people encouraged to go back to work in the office, and now it's all gone back again, and now some people are even blaming you for the Eat Out to Help Out campaign in terms of spreading the virus, although I'm not sure there's really any evidence for that whatsoever. I walked through the City of London yesterday, and I've got to be honest, I could have cried at the scenes I saw. Empty offices, boarded up shops, signs in the window saying, sorry, we're closed down till further notice, empty streets, empty pavements. It's a completely dead city. This used to be the thriving heart of our, not just our capital city, but economically wise, the thriving heart of our country. Is there any chance that we are actually going to get that back?
You're right. It is very sad. And I do, like you, walk through some of those same streets or drive through. And, you know, it's sad to see what was one of the world's most thriving cities.
Does it make you want to cry as well?
Yeah, no, it is very sad. I completely agree with you. When you consider what it used to be like, and to see it now, kind of shadow its former self, it is really sad, and it's obviously having a real impact on people's jobs that they're losing as a result of this. I am confident that we will get through this. We will get through this pandemic, and once we emerge on the other side, we can grow strongly and get that vibrancy back into our cities and town centres. You know, it's going to be difficult right now. I can't pretend otherwise. Right now, given the measures that we've had to put in place to suppress the spread of the virus, that is having all these impacts, and you're right to highlight them. But once we get through this, we need to look at what can we do to make sure our cities remain vibrant places. I think it's a good thing if people are in offices over time, especially for young people joining new teams, new workforces, for them to understand the culture of the organisations they're joining. That's much better happening in person. So I look forward to the day that we can get back to that and see our cities spring back to life with people at the theatres, people going out for a meal, people going out for a drink after work. You know, those are all things that we should strive for. You know, now, sadly, you know, we can't do all those
things. Is there any theatres left or if the cinemas closing and the like? You used the phrase, once we get through this a couple of times then. What does that mean? Because everything in the government's policy when we first went into lockdown back in March was about, we were trying to sort of, you know, flatten the curve so we didn't overwhelm the NHS, protect the NHS, build up capacity. We did that. We did that, I think, magnificently. I was watching, you know, from my spare bedroom doing my show, and was actually felt really proud of our country's efforts on that front. We're all out there clapping for the NHS, but we've done that. We are not seeing an exponential growth in terms of either infection rates or in terms of hospitalizations or deaths, and yet now the policy seems to be predicated on this phrase, defeating the virus, waiting till a vaccine comes. Can we keep on being in local lockdowns or 10 p.m. curfews and rule of six indefinitely unless or until we get a vaccine for this? What does when we get through this mean? When will we know we're through this?
Well, look, the advice we have from our scientists is we'll be in a much stronger position in spring or in 6 months' time. That's why the Prime Minister talked about 6 months and difficult winter. You know, partly that's a function of the seasonality of respiratory illnesses, which tend to ramp up over the winter period. So we need to get through that. And I think the good news is our testing capacity is increasing all the time, which obviously helps. It's up 40 or 50% since the summer, up to 250,000 a day. We're going up to 500,000 capacity by the end of October. You know, more testing helps us. And as you're right, with local lockdowns, that is a more targeted and nuanced approach. And that can, you know, we can be even more targeted over time. And that, you know, stops us having to do things to the whole country, which, as we, you know, are pretty drastic actions. Yeah. So, yeah.
When everything's been predicated on this £12 billion test, track and trace system, the world-beating system that we left with 16,000 people whose test results weren't entered on the computer, 50,000 people needing to be contacted. We've not even contacted all of them yet who may have become in contact. This was all based on the fact that there was an Excel spreadsheet that was about 13 years old was being used. You know, you're a money man, you're a numbers man. Would you use an Excel spreadsheet for this?
Well, look, there are a lot of very more talented data scientists than I involved.
Apparently not, with all due respect, Chancellor. Apparently not.
Look, of course, this should not have happened. And the Health Secretary was clear about that yesterday in Parliament. And we've launched an investigation. I think the thing now to focus on is what are we doing to fix the situation? And what I would tell your listeners is over the weekend, several thousand man hours were deployed to start contacting the contacts of all these people. As of, I think, 9 o'clock yesterday morning, over half had been contacted for a second time. Obviously, that number will be higher now. I don't have the most up-to-date figure in front of me. So that's important. And I think the other things that people should feel reassured by is anyone who was positively tested, they were contacted as normal in the normal time frame. And importantly, schools, care homes and hospitals, places where we really want to make sure that we are controlling any infection outbreaks, they are on a slightly different system, so they're not reliant on this, so they aren't impacted by this. And indeed, the Chief Medical Officer has confirmed that in terms of our analysis of the situation, that none of these numbers change any of that. So hopefully that provides some reassurance. But you're right, this should not have happened. And we're working on fixing it as quickly as possible.
Personally, I think a lot of us think heads should roll, but I know I've only got you for another minute or so. Final question. I'm not going to ask you, do you want to be Prime Minister? Every politician wants to be Prime Minister. We're not going to go there. I want to ask you, though, given your popularity ratings at the moment, Chancellor, sky high compared to the Prime Minister, when you meet with him, isn't it a bit awkward having the elephant in the room that you are far, 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 far more popular than the man who's your boss?
I'd say a couple of things. I wouldn't I mean, I certainly wouldn't get carried away with very short-term things, and what goes up comes down. That's inevitable in life. So,
but when the tax rises come,
you know, or I have to make difficult decisions all the time, right? So that, you know, that is, I think, an inevitability. So I wouldn't be too caught up on that. And I think that the Prime Minister did me the enormous honour of placing his trust in me to do this job 6 months ago. And I'm relatively, you know, new to politics in that sense. And he trusted me to do this job at an important time. I'm very grateful to him, not just for that, but also for his friendship. We've had to go through a lot together over the past 6 months. I've nothing but admiration for the job he's doing. And I see up close the difficulties of making these awful, awful decisions, trying to balance all these things. I certainly don't envy him that. I wouldn't wish it on anybody. And I'm very grateful that the country can benefit from his calm leadership, and that he can convey to all of us a sense of optimism that we will get through this, and we'll get through this together and emerge stronger on the other side. You know, I, for one, take a lot of comfort from his leadership at this time.
Online, on DAB, and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry? Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker, Talk Radio.
Donald Trump has returned to the White House. This is what he had to say from the White House balcony to the American people.
I just left Walter Reed Medical Center, and it's really something very special. The doctors, the nurses, the first responders, and I learned so much about coronavirus. And one thing that's for certain, don't let it dominate you. Don't be afraid of it. You're going to beat it. We have the best medical equipment. We have the best medicines, all developed recently. And you're going to beat it. I went, I didn't feel so good. And 2 days ago, I could have left 2 days ago. 2 days ago, I felt great, like better than I have in a long time. I said just recently, better than 20 years ago. Don't let it dominate. Don't let it take over your lives. Don't let that happen. We have the greatest country in the world. We're going back. We're going back to work. We're going to be out front. As your leader, I had to do that. I knew there's danger to it, but I had to do it. I stood out front. I led. Nobody that's a leader would not do what I did. And I know there's a risk, there's a danger, but that's okay. And now I'm better, and maybe I'm immune. I don't know. But don't let it dominate your lives. Get out there. Be careful. We have the best medicines in the world, and it all happened very shortly, and they're all getting approved, and the vaccines are coming momentarily. Thank you very much. And Walter Reed, what a group of people. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so that was a president after three nights in hospital. Let's talk to our next guest about all of that. Lord Darroch was Sir Kim Darroch. He was our man in Washington, Britain's ambassador to the United States for 4 years until the end of last year. He was forced to resign last summer, though, after the leak of diplomatic cables in which he was rather critical of the Trump administration. Delighted to welcome Lord Darroch to the show. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Julia.
Good morning. There's no doubt at all Donald Trump is putting the Trumpian spin on his clash with the coronavirus, very much viewing this, well, trying to make this a message about how, you know, he's recovered very quickly, he's very strong, that he took the risk, he got the virus because he was out there battling for the American people, showing leadership, but he has triumphed. How much of this is spin and how much of this is trying to make the best of a really bad deal just weeks away from an election which he looks on the polls to lose?
As you say, Julia, on the face of it, it looks like a remarkably quick recovery. On the other hand, only his doctors really know how complete the recovery is. And I saw something from a medical source this morning saying that he wasn't entirely out of the wood yet. I think it's primarily about how much better it looks to be recuperating from the White House than to be in hospital. And as you see from what he's just from what he said when he left, I mean, he needs to be the alpha male in any room. It's a very different message from the sort of one from what Boris Johnson was saying when he came out of hospital. It's very Donald Trump, just is. But whether he is completely recovered yet, and how long before we actually see him back on the campaign trail or even in the debate chamber, let's see.
Well, indeed. I mean, there seem to be lots of different conflicting stories coming out of Washington about whether he actually is not as sick as it's been said, and he was just sort of playing this for sympathy and then recovery and then going for that dynamic, or whether he's actually much more poorly. Kellyanne Conway, one of his closest advisors, she herself, one of the 12 or more senior White House staff who's tested positive for coronavirus since Donald Trump has. Her daughter, not a fan of Donald Trump, is known, only a 15-year-old, but she has been putting on social media that her mother has told her that the president is not doing very well and had to work to stabilise him. Now, I don't know whether we trust a 15-year-old teenager more than we do official White House staff, but I'm willing to give her as much credence as I do White House staff. How much can we trust what the official spokespeople are telling us?
It's not unusual, you know, for the offices of any leaders to kind of downplay how ill leaders are. And you'll remember that it all came to all of us as a surprise when Boris Johnson went from recuperating from the virus to suddenly being in hospital and then intensive care. So there's nothing unique about the White House on this. I mean, I think that the most telling comment came from Mark Meadows, who's the chief of staff, who said, I think on Saturday, that there were some worrying signs from the president that they had these two moments where they needed to give him oxygen. So I suspect it has been quite bad, which makes, in a way, his return to the White House from hospital all the more surprising. On the other hand, you have to remember he has a very extensive medical team in the White House too. So it's not like he's going away from his doctors completely. He'll be monitored very closely and looked after there as well.
Yes, rather different from the vast majority of the American people, as Joe Biden, the Democrat candidate, pointed out. In terms of how this will affect the outcome of the election, the sort of received opinion in Washington and across the United States is that's it. This exposes Donald Trump for, you know, his recklessness, not wearing a mask, not socially distancing, the super spreader event at the White House when he was announcing his nominee for the Supreme Court, and that, you know, he's exposed the fact that, look, he is responsible for these 210,000 US dead and all the damage to the economy, and this puts coronavirus center stage in the election, and that can't be good for him. But there are many who point out that actually the conventional wisdom doesn't always get it right when it comes to Donald Trump. He has a habit of defying this. If he can shore up his base and if he can convince enough people in the, you know, the states, the swing states, is it possible that this could actually work for him rather than against him on the election day?
Yeah, Arjun, this is all guesswork, of course. We don't know. But my own view is that most people have already decided how they're going to vote on the 3rd of November. Most Americans have. And the 40% or so that has been his extraordinarily solid and stable base through his presidency are going to continue to vote for him. notwithstanding the events of the last 72 hours. The 60% or so who are not fans of him, I think, won't have their views changed by this remarkable recovery. I'm not sure there are very many undecided out there. All that said, I think what he said as he left the hospital, and these comments about don't fear the virus and don't run away from it, all that stuff, that's fine, people will say, if they haven't had it. Those who are relatives of the 210,000 Americans who have died might say to themselves, well, it's all very well for you, but you've had this new cocktail of drugs and the best possible treatment, and it's a bit different for us. So I'm not sure that those comments on his departure are going to help his case. Okay. And of course, whether he can still campaign, let alone be in the debates. I mean, if he doesn't campaign, he doesn't feel the love from those huge crowds, he will be a diminished candidate.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker, Talk Radio.
Criminals, including very serious offenders like violent offenders and paedophiles, have been receiving shorter jail sentences, some even avoiding prison altogether as the effect of coronavirus measures continue. Obviously, prolonged cell confinement, 23 hours a day, and visitor restrictions has been factored into judges' rulings. Let's talk to Sir Bob Neill about this. He's chair of the Justice Select Committee and a Conservative MP. Good morning to you, Sir Bob. It's amazing. The tentacles of this pandemic and the lockdown have reached so far into every crevice, nook and crevice of our entire lives, hasn't it? But it also means, as we're hearing now, that it's even helping the criminals out.
Up to a point. I mean, I've tried to look at some of the details of those cases that were reported, and I'd just be a bit wary because frequently two or three lines in a newspaper won't always encompass all the issues that arise in the sentencing. But there is no doubt that there's pressure on the system, and I think we do need to tackle that. So just with that caveat, it's not, I think, widespread that you're getting major discounts in sentences. Particular cases can be referred to for being unduly lenient, if that's the case.
Yeah.
But it's certainly true that there's a lot of pressure on prison staff and on the courts, and we do need to tackle that. That's certainly right.
Yeah, indeed. But of course, an awful lot of the cases simply aren't coming to court at all.
Yeah. And that's one of the perhaps biggest problems, actually, is that, for example, custody time limits are being extended. So people who may be acquitted are kept in prison longer than perhaps is appropriate. And also sometimes people are being granted bail when they might not otherwise have been. So what I think from our committee's point of view, we really need to major down on is getting rid of the backlog in these serious criminal cases, because that's bad for the victims, bad for everyone.
Yeah, and indeed, of course, we know that, obviously, with care homes, people not able to receive visitors large amounts of the time throughout this pandemic, but also, again, in prisons as well. And again, that does have an effect on people's mental health. And again, the punishment is to be locked away, not necessarily to have no contact whatsoever with your families. And again, it's also a punishment, honestly, on the children of prisoners and the like, which perhaps they wouldn't have foreseen. Let me also ask you, as you've been one of the Tory MPs who's been speaking out about the issue of the lockdowns lately. We're told that there's going to be a rebellion by Tory MPs as early as today about this, the 10 p.m. curfew, questioning whether or not there is actually any science behind this. But question marks whether the Labour Party would actually vote to support that measure actually being reinstated. Yeah. Where are you on that?
Well, I'm going to listen to what the ministers say, but I think they've got to do a lot of explaining. Because as a London MP in the London suburbs, I think we've chatted about this before, I don't see the logic of this broad brush approach with a 10 p.m. curfew, which is really hurting the entertainment sector, the event sector. We talk about the arts just now. I listened to that. It's really crippling some parts. And chucking people out of the street onto the streets in central London to ram onto a tube seems to be self-defeating. And at the same time, 10 p.m. In suburban Chislehurst, we talked about, makes no sense at all.
Yes, I mean, indeed, and we're seeing this across the country. This is not just happening. We've seen videos of parties in Liverpool and elsewhere. And again, we know that a lot of people, frankly, those who don't get up at 4:40 like myself in the morning, are going, oh, well, in that case, we'll just go to the local off licence and we'll get some more booze. Yeah. And then the suggestion was that we should have a 9 p.m. curfew on buying booze at the offie. I mean, the restrictions continue apace. When we looked at some of the restrictions that were happening in China, in Wuhan in particular, early on in this pandemic, I think think a lot of us were really, really shocked by it. But there was an element, well, you can do that in a totalitarian society, but you couldn't do it here. Most of us, when the lockdown happened in March, went willingly back into our homes. It felt it was the right thing to do. There was a real strong public consensus about it. I feel that consensus very much fragmenting now. Some people who, frankly, as far as I can tell, have barely left their homes other than go to the supermarket for the last 6 months. And other people like me in the office, I'm in cabs, I'm going to restaurants. I am absolutely obeying all the laws. I am sticking to the rule of six, even though I despise and hate it. I wash my hands all the time. Our office is unbelievably safe here. Wear my mask when I'm required to, and socially distance. But there is definitely a clear chasm building up in our country between those who want to get out of lockdown and those who want to go and lock down further. How is that going to be resolved?
I think the government's got to be much more upfront with people about what is or isn't supported by the science. I've not seen any real scientific basis for this 10 p.m. curfew, for example. I think they've got to treat people like adults. What I've found is in our own family and elsewhere, the people who are vulnerable have shielded. They've been sensible. But we shouldn't be inflicting that, I think, upon everybody else. Because I'm concerned, as you were talking about, the mental health issues, the people missing appointments for cancer checks, GP appointments, all the other things. That long term could do more damage than the pandemic.
Online, on DAB and on the Talk Radio app. Talk Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Julia Hartley Brewer Daily. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe and give me a good review. And don't forget to catch me on the Talk Radio Breakfast Show every weekday from 6:30 until 10.